everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller Podcast. Two dailies. I don't stutter. Well, not always. Sometimes. It's the Daily Caller Podcast for the 25th day of November 2019. You're on your way, or soon to be on your way, to a tryptophan coma. Wherever you may be, may your Thanksgiving be filled with dead bird. Delicious dead bird, not like a trail of pigeons or something. Unless that's your thing, man. I ain't going to judge. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, downloading, telling a friend, doing all that good stuff. I'm going to knock on wood. There it is, knocking on my wooden desk. I believe this has the possibility of being a somewhat slow news week. And then all hell will break loose. I go ahead and throw that out into the universe, and then you expect all hell to break loose. But I just have to tell you, I think that with it being 3 days, with Congress being out of session, it has the possibility of being a slow-ish, I'm going to throw ish on there, slow-ish news week. We might be able to get a respite from the insanity, if only for 1 week. So enjoy it. And as a native Detroiter born and bred, I have to say, now that I haven't lived there since 2001, but I was born and bred there. I want to apologize to you in advance for your Thanksgiving horror show that you're about to see. No, it doesn't have anything to do with cars. Doesn't have anything to do with Thanksgiving, really, except for the fact that the Detroit Lions will be playing on Thanksgiving. And I want to apologize in advance for what you will witness if you watch football on Thanksgiving, because there isn't much going on Thanksgiving. So, yeah, they just lost to the Redskins yesterday. And that is like losing a scrimmage game against a high school team. It was a pathetic game. They're a pathetic team. I always say that Detroit doesn't have a professional football team. We just have the Lions. And that was never more true than yesterday. Yuck. So, in advance, I want to apologize to you on behalf of not only the metropolitan Detroit area, but the entire state of Michigan, including the Upper Peninsula, for what you will witness. And if football is your thing, take comfort in the fact that there will at least be two other games on that day. The Lions usually play at noon or 12:30 or whatever. Think of that as the crappy finger food that you just have while you're waiting for the main course. God, they're a terrible football team. I don't ever get to watch the Lions because they're never good enough to make it on national television, or rarely. They throw them like one Monday night bone per year. But I watched it yesterday, and I spent time on the phone with my dad talk, because he always complains about how bad they are. And I said, you weren't kidding. Like, they're even worse than I thought. Good Lord. Anyway, we've got a lot to get to today that is not football related, although Colin Kaepernick is still in dispute with the NFL. Like, oh, no. Colin Kaepernick is in a dispute with the NFL about that stupid workout he skipped. Blah, blah, blah. Dude is over. Okay? Dude is washed up. Just get used to it and move on. I saw somebody wrote an article about how he's really winning the PR war, this Colin Kaepernick, with the NFL. And if him not playing in the NFL is victory, I wish him continued success. What a damn joke the whole thing is. Anyway, we got a lot to get to. Like I said, Mike Bloomberg. I'm going to start with Mike Bloomberg. Not with Michael Bloomberg, because Michael Bloomberg, I don't think the guy stands a chance. But Michael Bloomberg, because of what Bloomberg News is becoming, because Michael Bloomberg is running for president of the United States. It's a shocking development. Then we've got some little Kamala Harris news. She just wants to seize drug companies' patents. Yeah, there's no fascist instincts there. When you're desperate to get attention in the Democratic Party, you got to do crazy things. Or are you crazy, and is that why you're getting attention in the Democratic Party? I shall opine. All that and more. Like I said, it's an action-packed show, even though there's not a big story. We will have a lot of stories that you do need to go know about. But first, you need to know about CBD oil from AncientLifeOil.com. Don't, I know you're going to go, oh, fast forward. God, a commercial. Whoa, just, you know what? It keeps this show free. Keeps the show free. And don't you like free? I like free, except I don't like working for free, even though I basically do that. Look, I didn't believe in CBD oil. I thought it was snake oil. I thought it was garbage. I thought it was just a hoax. I thought it was one of those things that they're trying to, the latest fad. Oh, try this. Try that. Take this pill and lose 100 pounds tomorrow. Never works out. Well, CBD oil is different. I was surprised. I put a few drops under my tongue every day, and the stress and the little aches and pains, they're gone. My eye strain is gone, and I look at a computer screen for a living. My eye strain is a thing of the past. It's made a huge, huge difference. Don't take my word for it, though. Search for yourself. Go ahead and look up CBD oil benefits. See what people are saying out there. See why hundreds of thousands of your fellow Americans have become believers. See why CBD oil is now available everywhere, really. Groceries in the grocery store today. They had CBD oil there. Shelf space is limited in grocery stores. It's hard to get into grocery stores. You have to be bringing something to the table, and CBD oil does, and none is better than AncientLifeOil.com. It's not going to get you high. It's not psychoactive. Don't worry about that. It just brings you results. Go to AncientLifeOil.com, all one word, AncientLifeOil.com, A-N-C-I-E-N-T, LifeOil.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. You get 10% off your order. 10% off your order. Try it once, and you'll be a believer. I swear. And, you know, don't try that garbage stuff behind the counter at the grocery store. Lord knows where that's made. Ancient Life Oils CBD oil is the highest quality organic oil available on the market. Check it out for yourself. Give it a shot. And it helps support the show. So you can't beat that. Okay. Let's talk about Michael Bloomberg, billionaire playboy. He's always billionaire playboy, billionaire playboy. I imagine he's pretty insufferable. It's because I don't know that he's ever been married. I know that he hasn't been married since he's been in the public spotlight. But I think a lot of billionaires, self-made billionaires, are kind of insufferable people. They have a lot of arrogance going on. I think if you build something from nothing, I think that it goes to your head. Let's just say that. And it's not that it's wrong. It's not that it's a bad thing. Okay, Mike, I looked it up. Michael Bloomberg was married one time until 1993. He's also got a history of saying some pretty sexist things that are kind of funny and encouraging it's not going to fly. You know, the sins of the past judged through the lens of the future is where the Democratic Party is today, by the way. And somebody with Michael Bloomberg's baggage when it comes to the ladies, or as he might say, the broads, is not really going to fly very well with the woke uber feminist left. So I think he's setting himself up for humiliation. But when you've got $100 million right off the bat, and that's just in your left front pocket, and you're willing to spend it all on your candidacy, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see how much the party that wants to get money out of politics is going to allow money to influence their politics. I do kind of find it funny that the Democratic Party, the party of the working man, they're the working man's party. They sure have a lot of really rich people running for president, don't they? They got two billionaires. There was a third billionaire, the guy who founded Starbucks or was the first CEO of Starbucks, whatever he did, Howard Schultz. He dropped out or decided he wasn't going to run because it just wasn't working out. His billions didn't get him anywhere. Even running a woke company for its entirety of its life wasn't enough for the left. He was a billionaire. He's the enemy. Then they have Tom Steyer. Tom Steyer made his fortune in oil and coal. But Tom Steyer is now perhaps the most woke when it comes to climate change. So he's battling, he's fighting, he's dropping tens of millions of dollars to try and appeal to these people and say, look, I've got a lot of money, but I'm one of you. I'm a believer. I am a devout climate changist. And he's polling, you know, he's making enough polling data numbers to make the debates. So that's something, I guess. The real test for Michael Bloomberg officially announcing will be the December debate. Will he qualify for the December debate? You have to either have a certain number of donors by then. I think it's over 200,000 individual donors by then because they're trying to winnow the field. The problem is that nobody's exciting the base. So they're all getting enough donations to get up on stage, or a lot of them are. And Mike Bloomberg is not going to solicit donations. So the only way he's going to make the debate stage next month is by buying ads, by buying his way up there, by polling well enough. He's got to somehow convince a bunch of liberal Democrats, and those are the pollsters. These are the people who are going to be polled. These are the people that they're going to query in the polls. He has to convince 4%, I think it is, that of the Democratic Party electorate, that he should be their nominee. He's the guy. I don't know how he does that, because they inherently despise people who have money. Now, Michael Bloomberg made his money lots of ways, but the biggest way is by founding Bloomberg News. I wonder how long it took him to come up with that name. And as such, as the owner of a news company, it's a very interesting situation, because there's Bloomberg News, there's Bloomberg Opinion, there's a lot of crossbreeding and bleeding across the lines in that thing, as there always is in newsrooms. They always say, well, we have a firm wall between our editorial pages and our news pages. They don't. They don't. They work for the same company. They go to the same coffee shops in the morning. They all talk to each other. It's all one big club. But what's interesting about Bloomberg News, because he is he still owns the company, is they have an announcement to make over this, because it's got to be kind of weird if your boss decides to run for president, right? And what if your boss has done something that you don't like? Are you going to be able to report on what your boss did? If your boss did something bad, if your boss was a jackass at the office Christmas party last year and played a little grab ass with the lady from accounting, are you going to report on that? Well, the answer at Bloomberg is a resounding no, shockingly enough. They released a statement, I swear to God. This is not from The Onion. This is from Bloomberg Opinion. Quote, "The place where Mike has the most contact with editorial is Bloomberg Opinion." But this is a statement from Bloomberg News, but they're talking about the whole company. Mike has had the most contact with editorial is Bloomberg Opinion. Our editorials have reflected his views. So he is the company. Every opinion, apparently, that Bloomberg has ever taken is the direct result of what Michael Bloomberg believes. That's going to make for some interesting research and some interesting accountability from other news organizations, because Bloomberg ain't going to do it. And I'm not just being hyperbolic. I actually have the proof on that, because the statement continues. David Shipley, Tim O'Brien, and some members of the board responsible for those editorials, meaning his stenographers, will take a leave of absence to join Mike's campaign. We will suspend the board, so there will be no unsigned editorials. Oh, it's a big sacrifice there. But I find it interesting that so many people who work at Bloomberg are leaving to go and work on the Bloomberg campaign. Whenever anybody goes from Fox News to the Trump administration, Brian Stelter, the human potato, absolutely soils his underoos, going, "Can you believe the revolving door of this?" And then he turns to three former Obama administration officials who are all masquerading as not commentators but journalists and says, "Can you believe that Fox has such low standards of what constitutes journalism, Jim Sciutto?" It's so sad and pathetic. They're such hypocrites. Anyway, it continues. Our columnists, who produce the majority of Bloomberg Opinion's content, will continue to speak for themselves, and we will continue to take some op-ed articles from outsiders, although not op-eds on the election. Like, huh? Why not? Why? What? what are you writing about if you never write about the election? Bloomberg Opinion will be led by Bob Burgess, with Rito being the main overseer on the editorial management committee. Okay. That covers the vast majority of what this newsroom does. See, there's the newsroom and then there's the opinion side. We will continue our tradition, and this is where it begins. You begin to see the editorial and the news side. Remember, there's editorial and there's news side, and we were told that never the two shall meet. This statement was written by or released by the company, which owns both. That covers the vast majority of what this newsroom does. We will continue our tradition of not investigating Mike and his family and foundation. Isn't that lovely? You own a news company. Nobody knows you better than the people who work with you on a daily basis. And the people who work with Michael Bloomberg on a daily basis are supposed journalists. Their job is to, at least theoretically, inform the public on the goings on in and around their government and by government officials and those who would seek to be government officials. But because he's the boss, they're not going to look into anything. So all the rumors floating around Bloomberg's headquarters, and I guarantee you there are rumors floating around Bloomberg's headquarters, because there are rumors floating around every headquarters, especially about a pseudo-playboy billionaire owner. You know, you can imagine the rumors swirling around the headquarters. Those will be ignored. They will not be investigated. They will not be reported upon, not even his family or his foundation. Now, how many stories have you seen about the Trump Family Foundation, whatever it was called? I bet you've seen a lot of them, because there have been a lot of them. The Washington Post won a Pulitzer Prize for going through every receipt and every piece of paper filed by the Trump charities to find anything inconsistent with the law or anything shady or anything they didn't like, so on and so forth. They won awards for it. They are routinely praised for it. Oh, they love themselves when they go after the Republicans. But when it comes to Michael Bloomberg, who has more money than Donald Trump and has a charitable foundation, who, you know, is mostly, those charitable foundations are mostly there as a tax dodge, Bloomberg is not interested. Bloomberg News, Bloomberg Opinion, Bloomberg nothing, Bloomberg Business, they're not going to look into these things. Oh, but don't worry. If you're sitting there and you're going, wait a second, I like Mayor Pete Buttigieg, or I like Elizabeth Warren, why are they not being extended the same courtesy? Oh, they are. They are, because the statement continues. They say, and we will extend the same policy to his rivals in the Democratic primaries. Now, isn't that lovely? If there is anything worthy of investigation in the past or present of any Democrat running for president, no one from Bloomberg, any Bloomberg properties, will be investigating them. They're done with journalism when it comes to Democrats. Now, the reason they're doing this is because if they treat Michael Bloomberg one way and everybody else differently, their credibility would suffer. So somehow they thought that, well, if we just walk away from all the investigation of anything related to any of the Democrats, then our reputation is protected. No, their reputation is soiled in feces. They're basically saying, we're not going to do journalism when it comes to the presidential campaign or the fight for the Democratic Party's nomination. How do you do that? Do you think Bloomberg would go, no? Now, if Bloomberg, let's just use the logic that the left uses against Donald Trump, all right? If he didn't have anything to hide, he'd be out there saying this, that, and the other. If he didn't have anything to hide, he'd be releasing all the classified materials from every phone call he's ever had with a world leader, blah, blah, blah. You get it. If he's not cooperating with Congress, he must have something to hide, rather than the idea that they're co-equal branches of government, and there are principles involved here. No, no, no. The benefit of the doubt is never, ever, ever given to Donald Trump, never, ever, ever given to a Republican. Yet, if Michael Bloomberg, upon deciding to run for president of the United States, did not walk into his employees, or at least the upper echelon of his employees, the people who will be shepherding his company as he embarks on this colossal waste of money and time, and say, you know what, I'm running, I want to be treated like every other candidate, all holds are off, go to it. I get it. When you're a private citizen, you own this company, you don't want your investment, your property, to come after you and going, hey, who's Mike Bloomberg banging, or was Michael Bloomberg stealing money? I get it. He doesn't want that. He can control at least that. But when you're running for president, all holds should be off. It should be game on, especially for a journalistic outfit. It should be, hey, journalists, do journalism. I don't care. I have nothing to hide. Come at me, bro. Come at me. That Michael Bloomberg didn't do that makes me think that perhaps Michael Bloomberg might have something to hide. I mean, if we're just applying the same logic that Democrats throw at Republicans all the time. Now, what's funny is they go on to say, we cannot treat Mike's Democratic competitors differently from him. No, so you're going to give them all special treatment when you could just treat him like them, but they aren't going to do that. If other credible journalistic institutions publish investigative work on Mike or the other Democratic candidates, we will either publish those articles in full or summarize them for our readers, and we will not hide from them. Yes, you will. Yes, you will. For the moment, our team will continue to investigate the Trump administration. The same statement. There's no gap in there. They just continue on down this road. However, while we're going to be treating Democrats with kid gloves and not looking into anything that might be scandalous involving any of them, fear not, we will still keep hammering the Trump administration. As the government of the day, they say, if Mike is chosen as the Democratic presidential candidate and Donald Trump emerges as the Republican one, yeah, because, you know, Bill Weld is totally going to beat him in the primary, we will reassess how we do that. Now, isn't it interesting? You're not even getting a commitment from Bloomberg to return to their version of pseudo-journalism if Mike Bloomberg were to win the nomination of his party. Yeah, we don't really expect him to win. But hey, you know what? When you got $50 billion and nothing but time on your hands, you want to go out and have a political party as your plaything, knock yourself out. We're not going to report on him. We're not going to cover him. We're going to pretend that all the stuff we know about him is stuff we don't know. And if he should get the nomination, well, then we'll see if we will decide to try to do journalism again. What a total and complete corruption. I mean, not that I ever really took Bloomberg all that seriously. Occasionally they get things out there, but it's certainly not a website that I go, well, I got to go see what's going on in the world. I'm going to go to Bloomberg News. Not really in my rotation of news websites, which is vast and varied, by the way. A lot of liberal ones. But liberal outlets can, in fact, report the news. Bloomberg is now saying they will not, in fact, report the news. And they're releasing this statement to the world. There were several members of the Bloomberg editorial board and employees there who have left to go join the campaign. The media reporter Paul Fahey at the Washington Post says, seven journalists from Bloomberg Opinion, including the two top editors, David Shipley and Tim O'Brien, will join Mike Bloomberg's campaign, company says. Unclear what their roles will be. Shipley is a former speechwriter for Bill Clinton. That last little part is interesting. And remember that next time you hear the human potato or any liberal talk about how so-and-so went from Fox News into the Trump administration and Sarah Huckabee Sanders comes out of the Trump administration and goes right to Fox News. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, by the way, is a commentator. She is not a journalist. She is not pretending to be a journalist. Jim Sciutto, however, is pretending to be a journalist. He was an Obama political appointee. Yet CNN is not outraged by that. Hell, CNN hired the guy. There are countless examples of this. Mostly, it's countless examples of Democrats in the media pretending to be journalists who then went and worked in the Obama administration. The one that really leaps to mind was it Tim Carney? He was the former press secretary. He was the press secretary for Joe Biden. And then he was the press secretary for President Obama. Before that, he was editor at Time Magazine, a very serious journalist, very serious journalistic news organization. Well, once your top guy bails to go work in a Democratic administration, might you then look back at their work with a bit of a jaundiced eye? If you're believer enough, because I guarantee you he was making more money working for Time Magazine than he was as press secretary at the White House. President makes $400,000. I don't know if anybody makes $200,000, to be perfectly honest with you, but press secretary is several rungs down from there. He's probably making $150,000, $160,000. That's a pretty massive pay cut. To take that kind of a pay cut, because Tim Carney is married to Claire Shipman, who used to be at ABC News. I don't know if she's in the news business anymore or not. But they have a couple of children. They have a very, very nice big house in the Washington, D.C. area, ironically filled with communist propaganda. There's a profile of them, and all over the walls is like Soviet-style propaganda. Not that there's anything wrong with it if you're framing it ironically, but when there's that much of it, you begin to think that's a little weird. I mean, in my office, I have something of Chairman Mao that a friend of mine who went to China actually got. It's original from the 60s, and it's just kind of cool, but it's framed ironically. It's on display in my office, not in my living room, which is where the communist propaganda is at Tim Carney's house. But there was no outrage over this is sullying retroactively everything that Tim Carney did as far as journalism goes, right? Remember that? It's not Tim Carney, it's Jay Carney. Sorry, because I know Tim Carney. Sorry, Tim Carney. He's been a guest on this show. But Jay Carney, nobody said, well, this calls into question all of the work that Jay Carney did while he was a journalist. We should go back and re-examine it, and we should be a little bit suspicious of anything that he wrote because there is likely a hint of partisanship in it. You don't just, you know, whip off your mask like the Scooby-Doo villain at the end of the show and expose yourself to be something completely different. You likely showed yourself to be what you are the whole time, just nobody was looking and everybody in the club agreed with you. So those sorts of things cause all sorts of outrage. What is going to happen with these seven journalists from Bloomberg when Michael Bloomberg craps out? Well, normally you would think that they would be done in journalism, right? I mean, they showed their hands. There's no question about their politics, and it's going to be really tough for people to take them seriously as journalists. However, they did it for the boss. Their boss is the candidate. If you leave your job to go follow your boss on their little adventure, you take a leave of absence, that's the way it's being described, to go follow your boss on their little side project and the wheels come off that, the boss goes back. And theoretically, since you didn't resign, you just took a leave of absence, you go back. They're showing what's under their masks. They should not be taken seriously as journalists ever again. As opinion journalists, fine. But as real journalists, absolutely not. Because by leaving to take jobs with Bloomberg's campaign, they're exposing themselves and their politics. You shouldn't be able to tell what a journalist's politics are. You really shouldn't. If they're any good and they take their jobs seriously, you wouldn't be able to. But most of them aren't any good. And nobody should take them seriously. But I just found that very interesting because the buzz is about, ooh, Bloomberg is entering the race. Bloomberg is entering the race. What does this mean for Joe Biden? What does this mean? I don't think outside of New York and the Acela corridor, the Washington, D.C. area, maybe up in Boston, Baltimore, because Bloomberg went to Hopkins for undergrad and has given a ton of money to Hopkins, and Los Angeles, just because he's rich and rich people all hang out together. I don't think most people know who Michael Bloomberg is. I don't think most people care who Michael Bloomberg is. He's not a charismatic speaker. He's incredibly boring. He is a control freak who loves to ban things or try to ban things. Styrofoam, straws, Coke, you name, not cocaine either, like Coca-Cola, you name it. And he's tried to ban it or regulate it. Styrofoam, you got to get rid of it. Guns, he wants to ban all guns. He's funding, he's thrown hundreds of millions of dollars into all of these anti-Second Amendment groups. But yeah, you can buy favor with the left as far as them not coming to your mansion first when it comes time to kill all the billionaires, to storm all the billionaires, to rip off all the billionaires. They'll come to your house last, if you've been woke enough by their standards. But they will come to your house. They will get to you. You cannot buy off zealotry. You can only postpone it with money. So there's no way in hell, and I'm going to lay down the marker right now on the 25th of November, there's no way in hell Michael Bloomberg ends up being the Democratic Party's nominee. There just is not. But what this does do is it really scares the hell out of everybody in the race, because he's coming in with the possibility, the prospect, and the willingness to spend $100 million, according to published reports, on his campaign. This is devastating to Joe Biden. Not because, like I said, people are going to be flocking to Michael Bloomberg, leaving Joe Biden. Joe Biden, I think, he's going to always be somewhere between 20% and 30%, just because people go, oh, Joe Biden, I know that name. He's got that universal name recognition. What Joe Biden is lacking is money, any serious money. He has some of the least cash on hand of any of the candidates in the Democratic field. He has somewhere in the neighborhood, was, I guess, at the end of last week, about $7 million. And that's been depleted. You're probably spending at this point $500,000 a week if you're being smart with your money. That doesn't mean that he is. It could be $1 million a week. Joe's biggest problem, aside from that, is most of his money comes from big donors. The rich people who write the $2,500 checks or whatever the maximum amount allowed is. So you can't go back to the well. You can't go back to these supporters of yours and say, hey, could you help us out again? You can't do it. They've legally hit their maximum. Whereas someone like Bernie Sanders, who has, you know, a couple million donors probably at this point, has gotten donations from a lot of people of $50 here, $20 there, $100 there. When you have enough donors, you can live off of small donations and have a lot of money. The benefit of that is when it comes time to really try to get more money, you can go back to people who've already proven themselves as supporters and willing to give money and say, hey, could you give us another $25? Could you give us another $100? Whatever it is. Joe Biden doesn't have that option. Joe Biden isn't out there inspiring new people to come in, new donors flocking to Joe Biden. Nobody's flocking to Joe Biden. If anything, they're sort of content-ish with Joe Biden, or his support is slipping. He's not growing anywhere. So he's really screwed, because Bloomberg's entry into this race, they're fighting over the same lane. And Bloomberg, you know, for all of his deficiencies as far as his communication skills go, Bloomberg can actually talk like a normal human being, string a coherent sentence together, and be thoroughly aware of where he happens to be at any given moment in time. The same cannot be said for Joe Biden. I don't think Bloomberg's entry really impacts Elizabeth Warren all that much. I don't think it impacts Bernie Sanders all that much. Their support is the further, you know, there's socialism, and then there's full-blown socialism. They're occupying the full-blown socialism lane, whereas Biden and now Bloomberg, kind of, along with Buttigieg, kind of want to occupy the just socialism, thanks, lane. It could also hurt Buttigieg for the same reason, although Buttigieg has a lot more energy. He's a younger guy. I'm not saying that Michael Bloomberg is low energy. I'm saying energy in the campaign, energy in the excitement of supporters. Buttigieg has a lot more of that than a Joe Biden does, and I suspect will have a lot more of that than Michael Bloomberg will. The thing is, $100 million when you're fighting over 30% of the pie, you can buy a lot of pie for $100 million. I think that people who don't really know Pete Buttigieg, but think of him as the more moderate compared to Bernie and Warren, and don't feel comfortable with Joe or don't like Joe for whatever reason or think he's going senile. And they go, well, you know what? I'm going to go with Pete. I like Pete. Pete's the same thing or similar to Biden. I'm going to go with him. Now they have an alternative. So I looked for Bloomberg to get some support from Biden and some support from Buttigieg. Enough to make a difference? I don't know. But things are about to get very, very interesting because no matter what, $100 million, it might not capsize the boat, but damn, it's going to rock that sucker. It's going to be fun to watch. I'm looking forward to it very much so as they all try to adjust and try and figure out what this means. If anything, who knows? I mean, Democrats are crazy. You can't predict crazy. You just can't predict crazy. Speaking of crazy, I want to play you two clips. One is from Nancy Pelosi last week at her weekly press conference, and one is from CNN on Friday by featuring Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, something like that. I don't know. She looks like a frog. She just looks like a frog. She's got bug eyes, unpleasant, and is left-wing radical as the day is long. Lunatic. But both of them are expressing the same thoughts, and when two Democrats express the same thoughts, you know that it's something. They're poll testing it. They're trying something out. So expect to hear more of this sort of insane psychobabble going forward. The first one from Nancy Pelosi. She makes an interesting claim here that somehow the White House refusing to violate or not exert executive privilege is, and then going to court to protect it, although they, the Democrats would have to actually go to court for this. But using the court system, using the right to access to the court system, according to Nancy Pelosi, is obstruction of justice. By using the justice system, as if the president of the United States immediately foregoes all of their constitutional and legal rights the moment that they raise their right hand and take the oath of office. That's insane. It's crazy, but it's an indication of just how desperate Democrats are to try and pin anything on Donald Trump. He's obstructing justice by not turning over these internal White House communication documents. Oh, sue him for it. No. If we going to court, that's obstruction of justice. Going to the court system is obstruction of justice. That is not obstruction of justice by any stretch of the imagination. But there is no pushback on this. First, Nancy Pelosi.
They keep taking it to court and no, we're not going to wait till the courts decide. That might be information that's available to the Senate in terms of how far we go and when we go. But we can't wait for that because, again, it's a technique. It's obstruction of justice, obstruction of Congress. So we cannot let their further obstruction of Congress be an impediment to our honoring our oath of office.
She sounds like she's talking with a retainer in her mouth, a loose-fitting retainer. I don't even know if they have retainers anymore. I think it's all that clear stuff that goes over your teeth. But she sounds like she's got a retainer in her mouth and it's falling out of her mouth. But yes, going to court, availing themselves of the court system, then the asserting their legal rights, that is obstruction of justice. If that's obstruction of justice, then everything is obstruction of justice, Nancy. Literally everything that goes on in court every single day is obstruction of justice. How do people take these Democrats seriously? It's not, you know, some backbencher congressman so-and-so you never heard of from BFE. I'm talking about the Speaker of the House. She is the top Democrat in the country right now. She is. And she's out there saying that asserting your rights to appeal to courts, that is obstruction of justice. Just acquiesce to everything we want. Forget precedent, forget your own rights, forego them, or else you are guilty of obstruction of justice. Now, that should be laughed off the public stage, to be perfectly honest with you. It should be, she should be embarrassed of having said that statement. Instead, we smash cut to CNN the following day. Brooke Baldwin is interviewing Congresswoman Jayapal. Brooke Baldwin plays the clip of Nancy Pelosi. She doesn't really have any objection to it. She doesn't. Brooke Baldwin, a teleprompter reader, I don't know. You would think that, you know, my 2-year-old daughter would understand the hypocrisy and the insanity of what Nancy Pelosi just said there, but you'd be wrong. These two ladies, shall we say, have a conversation where Jayapal says, reiterates the exact same thing. Again, with zero pushback whatsoever. What you're about to hear and what you heard from Nancy Pelosi is, in fact, un-American. It is un-American. You have rights as an American citizen. You do not forego those rights simply because you ran for public office, because you ran for political office, or because you won that political office. You have rights, and the executive branch itself has rights that it can assert. And asserting those rights is in no way whatsoever obstruction of justice. But these lefties have an agenda. They have an agenda, and they don't give a damn about anything else, including looking like complete moronic fools if it can advance the ball. Or maybe they just are moronic fools. Here's the audio. You can decide for yourself.
So if Democrats aren't waiting for the courts, and there's clear stonewalling from the White House, which Democrats believe clearly is obstruction of justice, how is that not enough to proceed forward?
Well, I think that what you are seeing is exactly what you're saying. You know, the evidence is clear. It has been clear. And now it has been corroborated in multiple devastating ways for the president. So we are not going to allow the president to use obstruction of justice and obstruction of Congress to stop us by saying, well, we need to call more witnesses. We have had so many witnesses, including the president of the United States, the key early witness to exactly what happened. So I think what Speaker Pelosi is saying is, we're not going to fall into their tactics of delay and, you know, trying to use the court system. That is in and of itself obstruction of justice. And that is what the president does not seem to understand.
Using the court system, asserting your rights, going to court, that is obstruction of justice. Have you ever heard anything so insane? That is obstruction of justice. We want to go here. We want to see all your bank records. No, you can't see all my bank records. You're trying to get a subpoena. I'm going to try and get a restraining order. That is obstruction of justice. How is that obstruction of justice? How is it? It's not. Let me just, I don't even need to go on about this. It is not. By no stretch of the imagination is it obstruction of justice. Yet this is where the Democratic Party lives. This is where CNN lives, that they can sit there and let this go out on their airwaves, that an elected Democrat, she's like the head of, she's either the current head or the former head of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, that she can say this is dangerous, that there's no pushback, you defending yourself, you asserting your rights. You know, who knows how you'll prevail in court. Nancy Pelosi was talking about, we're not going to bother going to court and challenging this. We're just going to move ahead without this evidence. Well, if it's so crucial and it's so important and you think you need it so desperately, why would you not? Why would you not? Well, because I can just call it obstruction of justice, because it doesn't matter. Facts don't matter to Democrats. They just assert things and move on. They throw little Molotov cocktails every once in a while, and they run away, and their supporters go, oh my God, can you believe what those Republicans are doing? Yeah, I can believe that the Democrats are threatening our very system of justice. You're guilty until you prove yourself innocent. It's not just about Donald Trump. It's about Brett Kavanaugh and every Republican nominee for everything. Asserting your rights and going to court to protect those rights is now obstruction of justice. The mere fact of doing it is obstruction of justice. It's kind of funny because CNN has gotten really terrible lately, and nothing exemplifies that more than this little setup by the human potato, Brian Stelter. The guest he had on is irrelevant. This is about 40 seconds long. The setup tells you everything you need to know about what CNN is and where they're coming from. What's funny and sad and pathetic is that they swear up and down, and none louder then Brian Stelter and Jake Tapper. We'll have something on him in a second. None swear more up and down six ways from Sunday that they are unbiased, fair journalists. Yet nothing about what they do say or put on their airwaves indicates that whatsoever, other than their insistence. You're about to hear Brian Stelter set up a segment where he had an author on who is asserting that supporting Donald Trump is a cult, that being a Republican is a cult. Now, why would they do this? It's a very simple reason. The alternative is to have an honest, open debate about policy differences. They don't want that. They can't handle that. They don't know how to do that. That's not who they are anymore. The American people have a full understanding of what Democrats want to do. Hillary basically ran on it last time, although a slightly watered-down version of it, and we overwhelmingly rejected it. The Democrats don't want to remind the American public of what they want to do because the American public always rejects it when they do, when it's offered to them. So listen to this setup and tell me, this could be, well, I'll tell you afterwards. Here's the potato.
The word cult has been popping up more and more. Think back to 2 weeks ago on this program, Anthony Scaramucci talked about his claim that Trump supporters are in a cult. Just last week, Dan Rather said he thinks support for Trump seems increasingly cultish. And this weekend in the Washington Post, Trump critic and Republican strategist John Weaver said the GOP is not a party anymore in the traditional sense. It's a cult. But none of them are mental health experts. Stephen Hassan is. He's out with a brand new book called The Cult of Trump. He has firsthand experience escaping the Unification Church back in the 70s, and he's decided to write this book because he believes there's something seriously wrong with our politics.
Yes, there is something seriously wrong with our politics, Brian. CNN exists, and you are gainfully employed in the news media as a journalist. That's what's wrong with our politics. Can you, now, let's, Brian basically wants us to return to 2009 through early 2017 when Barack Obama was president of the United States and there were exactly zero scandals on anything, anywhere, at any time. All was right, all was righteous, all was glorious, and all glory flowed from Barack Obama. He could do no wrong. In fact, Barack Obama could not even take a bath because he can only walk on water. He cannot sit in it. That's what Brian Stelter wants to return to. That's the way he views the Obama administration, which, I don't know, sounds to me like a bit of a cult. Again, whatever the left is doing and accusing conservatives of doing is generally what they're doing themselves. It's usually always what they're doing themselves. But I love this. They cannot engage on ideas. They cannot engage on issues. So they engage in secondhand discussions. Brian didn't have somebody on who disagrees with him. He never has anybody on who disagrees with him. He lives in a very sheltered little world where his potato head and potato body are protected. They are insulated from disagreement. Oh, he might occasionally see a mean comment on Twitter, but those are usually Russian trolls out in force trying to damage his very fragile self-esteem. So rather than have somebody on who supports the President of the United States and have a discussion about why it is that they support the President of the United States, or why it might be that he thinks that other people support the President of the United States, he brings out a liberal guy who writes an anti-Trump book accusing support for the President of being a cult, and we're supposed to take him seriously. Now, it's kind of funny because I can see why Brian wouldn't look back upon the Obama years in any longing fashion, because Barack Obama has, you know, the concept of the Obama years where Brian would like to live, but the reality of it is being rewritten. The reality of his horrible economy has always been written, but the left never bothered with that. They didn't care about that. They ignored that. It led to more government dependence, so they supported it. But there is a rewriting of Barack Obama's existence, because Barack Obama has been critical of the woke cancel culture, the little snowflakes out on college campuses who shout people down. To his credit, Barack Obama thinks that's a problem. He also says that the Democratic Party is going too far left and the American people might not want to go there. So you might want to pump the brakes and maybe get somebody who's a little more sane than the current people running. And that has led to a lot of op-eds and a lot of opinion pieces across the left-wing media about how Barack Obama is out of touch, how he's just, he's lost it, and it's time for him to exit the public stage, except for fundraising purposes, because rich liberals still love to give him money. Well, it's taken it up a notch. It's gone to a new level. The Washington Post. I'm just going to read the headline, because it's funny. It's written by a guy I sort of know, David Swerdlick, who is another CNN contributor. He also works at the Post. The headline, Barack Obama, comma, conservative. Yes, Barack Obama. When you think of conservatives, don't you immediately have Barack Obama leap to mind? Isn't that the way it works for you? How insane is this? They're now labeling Barack Obama as some sort of man of the right because he has come out against woke culture, because he didn't go far enough. They consider now Bernie Sanders to be the mainstream of the Democratic Party. I played it last week, Michael Moore saying, oh, I am the mainstream of the Democratic Party. Me and Bernie, we believe in what the American people believe. No. No, you don't, but that's what they believe. And if you believe that, then Barack Obama is not only to your right, Barack Obama is far to your right. So you can then be so delusional as to call Barack Obama a conservative. That is, you know, calling a black man a conservative is like calling him the N-word, I would think. If calling, Fredo Cuomo Fredo is the N-word, then calling a liberal Democrat in good standing their conservative, that's got to be a total hate crime, doesn't it? Yet, it won't be called out. There is no outrage. They're trying to get Barack Obama in line is what they're doing. They know that he's the most effective communicator that they have, and they want him to be like them. And to his credit, he has yet to get there. He might, you never know, but he has yet to get there. Look, he's living high on the hog. He's got $50 million from Netflix or $100 million, whatever it was. He's got $60 million from his book deal. He's got speeches. He doesn't even need to work anywhere. He doesn't need to do anything. He doesn't need these people. And if they're going to keep crapping on him, and I hope they do, he's not going to be involved. He'll become radioactive because more people will read about Barack Obama and have their minds changed from these stupid opinion pieces than will remember. The people who are coming in to vote, remember, if you were 14 years old in 2016, you could really have no honest memory of Barack Obama's presidency in any tangible way. So when it comes around to your 18th birthday and your first election in 2020, you might not have any idea about Barack Obama. The people who are the ones who should be sort of cementing his legacy just from an outsider standpoint. The party apparatus and the believers are supposed to sort of elevate this person so that when they walk out on stage and give the speech, the rah-rah speech for whoever the nominee is, that people think, well, people I respect are tell me this person is great. I shall watch it with an open mind, or I shall watch it with excitement. Instead, they're getting the exact opposite. They're taking a big dump on him. That's going to pollute the minds, the opinions of these people. I love it when Frankenstein's monster comes back and destroys the castle. And that seems to be what we're watching happen here on the left. I love it. Now, I made another, since we're on CNN, it's been a really bad time for CNN, not just ratings-wise, but for credibility's sake. And you would think that somebody over there would step up and say, we need to be adults here. We need to have some kind of standards. And the person that many people point to, and I've done it in the past myself, is Jake Tapper. As every once in a while, he will give a real interview to a Democrat, an honest interview where he challenges some of their BS. He's given far too much credit for that, if you ask me, as he slips ever further into the left-wing malaise where he actually lives. His personal politics are very, very far left, and his history is very, very far on the left. But he was capable of being intellectually honest on occasion. Not so much anymore. Last night, I didn't watch it. It's pointless to watch it. It's garbage. It's propaganda. But CNN ran a special about all the lies of Donald Trump, and they put out a little teaser trailer for it. I just want to play a little bit of it. Maybe I'll play the whole thing. I don't know. It's 2 minutes long, so I'll probably stop it and not subject you to the whole thing. But listen to the tone and the tenor of this, and tell me again how CNN is remotely interested in journalism.
They've defeated ISIS.
We all know he does it.
The whistleblower has been very inaccurate.
He's the Babe Ruth of lies.
Windmill. They say the noise causes cancer.
This is a drug for him.
There is no president that lied as if it were a form of breathing, except Donald Trump.
Nobody's been more transparent than me.
This isn't a partisan thing. He just empirically says a tremendous number of things that are just completely wrong.
Yes, exactly.
In recent months, it's been about 22 a day.
Trump lies about every conceivable topic, from the weather
to the infamous Sharpie gauge. You can't make this stuff up.
Stronger, bigger, cheaper.
To immigration and trade.
We're not paying for the tariffs. China is paying for the tariffs for the 100th time.
That's wrong.
So we wanted to know, what is the impact of all these lies? In the U.S.?
Research shows that repetition increases the belief in false news.
On Capitol Hill.
The president was a factor in my decision not to run again.
In science.
What's at stake?
Lives.
And the world.
The president stands up and basically says,
what a great outcome. Congratulations.
Well, no, that's not the case. American credibility has been shredded.
Most of what he says should probably be presumed to be false until it's proven to be true.
I am a conservative Republican. Never did I imagine I would be pointing out the gross flaws of a Republican president.
People say to me all the time, well, what am I supposed to believe?
What should we believe? Who can we trust?
Just remember, what you're seeing and what you're reading is not what's happening.
A CNN special report, All the President's Lies.
All right, I played the whole thing because there really is no good place to stop it. It just keeps building to a crescendo of crap. But that's Jake Tapper. Now, Jake Tapper either pitched this idea for a primetime special, or he had it assigned to him and didn't say, I'm not going to do this. This is taking an editorial stance. I am a journalist. I can't do that. Just accusing the president of lying on this, that, and the other thing. And by the way, if you ever go through, the Washington Post is cataloging every single so-called Trump lie. The vast majority of them are differences of opinion. They are assertions of opinions. And many of them are actually false. But the ones that are really the most egregious being on that list are differences of opinion. But they count them. Why? Because they want to inflate that number. They want to inflate that number. They've never done this before. They'll likely never do this again. But they want to have the number to have the cumulative effect. If you say the president has lied 10,000 times, why, that's an easy to understand thing. If the Washington Post had any credibility, it would carry weight. It doesn't have any credibility, so it doesn't really carry weight, just as CNN doesn't have any credibility, so this doesn't really carry any weight. It will be people trapped in airports who are stuck watching this on mute. CNN will get its requisite 600,000 viewers on a Sunday night. It'll be a disaster from a ratings perspective, but still, CNN keeps plugging along because they're frauds. And underneath their suits, they're wearing the Democrats' uniform. They've always been wearing the Democrats' uniform. It's just more pronounced now. Lastly, we'll get off of CNN and just a little bit about Pocahontas, Elizabeth Warren. She seems to have peaked, at least for now, and is starting to slip a little bit in the polls. It'll be interesting to see how other people, Deval Patrick and Mike Bloomberg, entering the race will impact her in the polls. But her biggest problem is her. All of the lies that she's told, being a fake Native American, fired because she was pregnant, all of these things that turned out to be bogus. There was another moment where, because Elizabeth Warren has come out against charter schools, because why not? You know, what's working? Charter schools. Well, we must destroy them in the name of equality, because liberalism is not about raising people up. It's about knocking people down to the same level, all subservient to government and to liberals in power. She was talking to an activist for charter schools, a woman whose children are in charter schools, a black woman who is seeing results and likes those results and knows that Elizabeth Warren wants to kill it because she's beholden to the teachers' unions. And she lies. Elizabeth Warren lies to this woman who is terrified that if Elizabeth Warren becomes president, charter schools will be ripped away and her children will be forced back into crappy public schools. Listen to Elizabeth Warren and I'll tell you what the lie is after you hear her.
We're gonna have the same choice that you make for your kids, because I read that your children went to private school.
No, my children went to public school.
But we even if it was public school, it probably was the best public school.
The lie is, my children went to public schools. My children went to public schools. Well, it turns out her daughter did go to public schools, but her son did not go to public schools. Starting in grade 5, he started going to private schools. He went to a school that's a very expensive school down in Texas, as a matter of fact. What's kind of funny is she feels the need to lie about everything. After the lie was exposed by the Washington Free Beacon, who got their hands on a yearbook featuring little Alex Warren, Elizabeth's son. By the way, the kids started attending private school. Their son did right around the time the family started making real money. So the second they could get their kids out of public schools, they did. Oopsie. A spokeswoman, Kristen Orthman, from the Warren campaign, released a statement after being confronted with this reality. She says, quote, Elizabeth's daughter went to public school. Her son went to public school until fifth grade. Oh, okay, well then that doesn't make it a lie that she said there, because she's lying to this woman. My kids went to public schools. Yeah, well, they went over and played in the public schoolyard, and that's it. Of course, they went to their private expensive school, but no. It continues, Elizabeth wants every kid to get a great education, regardless of where they live, which is why her plan makes historic investments in our public schools. End quote. This is one of the biggest lies liberals ever tell, that the teachers aren't performing, that students aren't learning because they aren't paid enough. That's essentially what it boils down to. They just keep on saying, we need to invest, we need to invest, we need to invest. And you have to wonder, what are you going to invest in? Where does the investment go if not in teachers' salaries? Better pens? No. So the idea is what they're saying, essentially is that teachers don't really teach unless they feel as though they're being paid enough. Otherwise, they're just going to occupy their offices, their school, their classrooms for 9 months a year and enjoy their summers off, which is horrible, if true, and should be grounds for their firing. They don't want to get rid of bad teachers. See, the problem with most education system is bad parents, first of all. And then it's bad teachers and bad administrators. It's not the kids. The kids act badly as a result of those three things, particularly the parents. But what kind of vote do you get by saying bad parents? Parents need to be better. You don't get any kind of vote. You don't win any elections telling the truth. So you sit there and you say, we need to invest and bring everybody in and make sure that everybody has enough money so that you can learn to read and write and do math. It doesn't matter if you do it on a scratch piece of paper with a busted pencil or on a new MacBook Pro. Math is math. Either the person in front of the classroom can teach children how to do that or they can't. Either the administrators, who are the bosses of the people in front of the classroom, care about that and make that a priority, or they don't. They make things like making sure that bathrooms are open to everybody who wants to identify as something. You know, it's a matter of priorities, that they can use whatever bathroom they want. And it also has to be reinforced at home. So even if you have a decent teacher, if you have good parents at home who are interested and follow up with their children and make sure their children are learning and help them and make sure that the children care about learning, then you can overcome an awful lot in life. But if you are missing one of the two or one of the three, you're going to have a problem. If you're missing all three, you've got a major problem that no amount of money in the world is ever going to fix. I am all in favor of paying teachers more, and I am all in favor of paying good teachers a lot more to reward them. The problem is that teacher pay, thanks to teachers' unions, is based upon your years of service, not the efficacy of your service, not how good you do your job, how well you do your job. See, my English teacher was not very good. How well you do your job. That's the problem in education. And you get people who go into it because they want their summers off. They get $50,000, $60,000 a year, and they get their summers off, and they get job security. They can't be fired, and they get a pension when they get at the end of it. It's very appealing for some people. But if you want to make something more of your life, if you say, hey, you know what, if you find a math teacher that can teach kids really complicated math and how to think about math, and then they're able to use that wiring of their brain in other areas of their life to bring logic to their lives, I have no problem paying that teacher a boatload of money. The problem is you have to pay Mr. Sits on his ass 9 months a year the same amount of money because they have the same amount of years experience. That's the problem with education, not charter schools. Charter schools are a life raft for the parents who do care, so they're not dragged down by crappy teachers, crappy administrators, and the kids of crappy parents in other schools. And Elizabeth Warren wants to destroy that. That's sick. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and telling a friend and all that. And whatever portal you listen it to, you got to get the emails. And I listen to you on this thing, and I'm like, I never even heard of that. What the hell is that? I appreciate all of it. If you want to enter to win a signed copy of Rich Lowry's book, draw it next week. So next Friday, you'll find out if you win. Email me, Derek, at dailycaller.com. Otherwise, we'll be back tomorrow with another exciting episode. I'll see you then.
The GOP is not a party anymore in the traditional sense. It's a cult.